Hello and welcome to The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the interim president and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Ray Keck. I'm Jared Knight. Today we're talking about the university's past, present, and future and a decision by the Texas legislature in 1917 that would have a dramatic effect on the state of education here in Northeast Texas for the next century. Dr. Keck, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Jared. Wonderful to be here.
Why don't you talk about what it is that we're celebrating in March of this next year?
Well, in 1917, our founder, William Leonidas Mayo, finalized his plan to turn his college over to the state of Texas. He'd founded it in 1889, 1917, number of years. He was getting older. He knew that it couldn't go on forever and ever as his proprietary interest. He had three choices. He could have invited the Masonic Lodge to take it over. He could have invited the Methodist Church, or he could have invited the state of Texas. I think we're pleased, and I think history shows it was a wise decision to invite the state. And we're recognizing 100 years that this institution has been part of the state of Texas. There are a number of activities on campus that are being planned to mark this event. The art department is generating a set of graphics unique to the moment. A logo. They're planning sidewalk art all over the campus. The music department has commissioned music to be written to honor this moment. Noah Nelson, our vice president for media relations and community engagement, is chairing a committee to plan the festivities. The logo for the event will say, "Our Century as Lions." And remember, Lion, because Leonidas, that was his middle name. Mm-hmm. Not an accident where that came from. We're planning it on a Friday in March because we want to attract, we hope we can get the governor, we hope we can get legislators. It's during a session, but they typically shut down on Thursday night, so people probably will be available on Friday. So we're looking at Friday, March 10th to mark this event.
And our guest in studio today is President Emeritus of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Keith McFarland. Dr. McFarland, welcome to the studio.
Glad to be here, Jared.
So as we reach this milestone in the history of this institution, you've done a lot of study and focus and concentration on just exactly what was going on early in the history of this school that belonged to William Mayo. Talk about what led him to a point where he needed to seek out help from the legislature in order to keep the school moving forward.
First of all, we have to remember that Professor Mayo was very visionary in everything he did. I mean, the fact that he started this college at the age of 27, and he had in mind what the curriculum would be, a curriculum very different from the other area colleges. He incorporated culture and the arts, and using his wife, Etta May, she provided music instructions. So this was very, very progressive for the time, and he always had a vision of what he wanted his university to be. But starting in about 1913, this man who had worked so hard all of his life began to realize that his health was not what it should be. And so he had to start thinking, what am I going to do to preserve what I've worked so hard to bring about? And so that's when he began to consider the various options that he had. There was a physician in town and leading civic leader by the name of Dr. Warren Tejerinet, and he convinced him that Professor Mayo that he really needed to turn to the state, because he said they'll have the resources to support this, whereas the other two, over the long term, the Masonics and the Methodist Church may not be able to put the resources in there. So they came to that decision, or he came to that decision at the end of 1913, worked with State Senator Westbrook from Wolf City, and they got it on the agenda for the 1917 session. It was passed very quickly by the Senate because of the Senator Westbrook's standing there. And then the big problem became the House. The reason that was so difficult is places like Canyon, West Texas, wanted to get a normal school. In Denton, the normal college, which was later to become North Texas, wanted to get it. And there were a number of them, but fortunately, A&M Commerce was, well, what's now A&M Commerce, right, what was Mayo's college, got put on the list of places to be considered. And so that was, again, some good politics there between the state, our state senator, and Mayo. And it passed. And as we've indicated, the story about that is so phenomenal. It passed the Senate quickly in February, but then on March, whenever it came up in the House, it passed, and Senator Westbrook sent a telegram to Professor Mayo saying, your college has been approved by the Senate. All we need now is the signature of the governor. And Professor Mayo had a couple of, they call them seizures, right. Starting about noon that day. He passed away at 3:30, and the telegram from Westbrook arrived in Commerce at 3:52, 22 minutes later, almost the sort of things that you would put in a movie. But as we've indicated, maybe in our script we would have put that he found that it was going to go into the state system. So that's pretty much the history there. But again, Mayo, as a man of vision, becomes quite evident.
Without ever realizing that what he had built would be as successful as it would be, it seems as though he was doing it for the sake of education here in Northeast Texas. The school wasn't always here. It had burned down twice. Mayo had every reason, if not for his own convictions, to walk away from the project, and yet he didn't. And so we got to a point where the legislature believed in this institution and what it could become. And, you know, you skip ahead a few years, and the university becomes East Texas State College because we're offering more than just teaching degrees. It's no longer just East Texas State Teachers College. It becomes East Texas State College. And then doctoral programs began to be offered in 1962. And so then it becomes East Texas State University and lives under that banner until 1996, when it links up with the Texas A&M University system and becomes Texas A&M University Commerce. And that's, you know, in a nutshell, that gets us to the present. But the fact is that an association with the state offered so many great benefits. We talked about in advance of this program that there were so many other schools in small towns all throughout the state that are not here now.
Yes, it's amazing. Campbell, we go through Campbell and we see it's just a spot on the road. And there were two colleges there at the time that Mayo got his college in the state system. Greenville had two. Sherman had two. Sulphur Springs had one. Bonham had two. And none of those schools made it because they wanted to go it alone, just as they had been doing. And, you know, it would have been quite hard for Professor Mayo. All the blood, sweat, and tears that he put into creating this university, and then to have to turn it over. But I think that was the time he realized he had to act with his head rather than his heart. And I think he did. And fortunately for us, that was a good choice, because we wouldn't be here right now if he had not thought that way.
Well, and that head was pointed toward the future in practical terms as well as progressive education, because, you know, the notion of going it alone has in recent times been proven to be a bad one. We know now in education, everyone's interested. Who are you collaborating with? Who are your partners? You can't get much done without collaboration and partners. And that Mayo figured that out in 1917, and these other schools that went out of business because they didn't. That's another example of his seeing forward in the future and getting it right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, too, that when you consider how many times that the campus dealt with setbacks, crippling setbacks, and yet it survived, you're also looking at a supportive community that was unwilling to let the institution fail.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes. That was not true, I think, of the other area schools. They didn't see how important they could be to their community, and Mayo did. Let me just say a word more about Mayo and his progressive thinking. At that time, practically all of those other schools in this area relied on the recitation method of education. You would spend your time memorizing things, and then you would be called upon by the teacher in class, and you would basically repeat it back. And his curriculum was based on primarily on the idea of debate, debating, because he said in debating, you have to have the facts, you have to have the knowledge, but then you have to be able to think quickly and be able to express yourself. And so really, we come to this point in our history, 2016, that's a lot of what we're doing at colleges now, except we call it creative thinking or problem solving. And so in that way, he was very much ahead of his time. Sometimes we are accused of talking an awful lot about Mayo, but if there was ever a man that deserved to be have his life examined and be an example of perseverance and a good work ethic and all, he embodied it all.
Well, and we talk a lot, of, I think, today when we look back in the past about how unfair it is to judge figures in the past by our current notions of right and wrong and our current social issues. And, of course, that's absolutely true. People in the past looked at life as we do, in part because of who they were and when they were born and what was happening around them. Of course, that historians remind us of that all the time, and it's true. Nonetheless, I am particularly struck every time I look back when you find a figure that, yes, he was very much a figure of his day and a creature of his world, but he also saw ahead and he got things right that 100 years later we're so grateful he got right. One obvious example is Abraham Lincoln. He got right things that a lot of people around him didn't.
Right.
And so we look back, but you don't have to make allowances for his time and place. He was right then and he's right now. And this same thing can be said of Mayo.
What sort of opportunities, skipping ahead to present day, what sort of opportunities have students enjoyed and do they currently enjoy as a result of this 1917 legislative decision to take over administration of this university?
Well, I guess you're asking, why is it good to be part of the state of Texas?
For students.
Yes, for students. Well, and I think let's start with the most obvious. Yes, of course, Mayo's curriculum survives in all of the wonderful, I think, creative ways that we teach at this institution. But beyond that, today, a tremendous amount of discussion and focus on the cost of education and the accessibility of education. Who can have it? Do you have to be wealthy to get it? We're a state institution. This is a very, very good deal for students. Our state has many private institutions that are very strong and wonderful and deeply embedded in our common life, but they're very expensive. Within the reach of working people is a spectacular education at this institution because it's part of the state of Texas. And Texas in the nation is quite low in terms of average costs, and commerce is quite low in Texas for four-year institutions. So the mission that to reach out, Mayo, one of Mayo's creeds was that everyone that can is going to walk through that door. And we can do that today because we're part of the state. The state makes available a pathway to the American dream that is within the reach of any young man or woman who wants to step forward and ask for it.
We talk about the affordability of an education provided by the state, and I think that you can't have that conversation without sort of recognizing that, you know, the state does have to make decisions about these things, and sometimes they're tough ones. And I wanted, Dr. McFarland, if you would, talk about the role that this community played in 1986 when there was a question from the state about whether this institution, among others, ought to continue its relationship with the state.
Yes, I'll do that. And I'll put it in the context of this community support goes back to Mayo's years.
Right.
In 1907 and 1911, there were major fires that destroyed, in both cases, two of the three buildings on campus. Can you imagine the next day, here's a man, there's no insurance, there's no state to back him up. He just had to go out and rally support in the community of commerce and say, we need money to rebuild these buildings. And commerce was not a large community at that time. It was, you know, a couple thousand people. But the business gathered together and behind him and gave him the money to rebuild. And so the idea of this community backing this this educational venture has deep roots. Now, in 1986, the oil money was dropping out, and the state of Texas said, we've got to look and see where we can save some major money. And so the governor appointed a committee to come up with ways that they could cut educational expenses. And one of their preliminary solutions was that they would close down three or four state universities. And this was one of them. Saul Ross was another one. And I forget the other two smaller schools. But when that happened, our alumni, the people in this community, gathered together. We prepared a report. We began working on contacts we had in the legislature through our alumni throughout the state, through local community leaders. When this was going to be considered by the committee, we rented a large number of buses, filled them with people from not just Commerce, but Sulphur Springs, Greenville, Paris, and we descended down in Austin. We had then-Senator Ted Lyon stand up and talk about the importance of this institution. And we had the head of our student body make an impassioned plea to keep this on. And the committee ultimately reversed its decision and took us off that list. But there was a time there it was pretty scary because people didn't know what was going to be able to happen. But again, it couldn't have been just a few students and a few administrators did this. It had to be broad spectrum of supporters for this institution, and we had them, and they came and wrote letters, wrote thousands of letters from all over the state saying, this is an important school. This is essential to Northeast Texas.
Right. Well, you know, this story makes, I think, a very important point about the American way of life. I think in recent months there have been a lot of stresses in our society and a divided country and some pretty intractable positions. But underneath all of this, I think we're undergirded by impulses that are uniquely American and very strong. The story of the City of Commerce coming forward and helping this man rebuild his institution. Now, why did they do that? Because they thought it was important for themselves and for the future. In a conversation, actually, I was having yesterday with my wife, Patricia, she made, I think, a very interesting point about this. We talk about the American dream. Well, that's access for every young man and woman to the good life, to an education, a job, a decent living, a place in our society. And she said, and I think it's, and Keith, your example really bears it out. She said, there's a second part of that, and that is that every person on the way to that good job and good life feels an obligation to the community to help each other and to provide for the future. The notion of philanthropy, the notion of communal responsibility. It's not enough for me to provide for myself and my family. I need to think about you and your family, and together we need to think about the future families. That is uniquely American, and this institution really embodies it. It's in the bricks here. It's a wonderful thing to think about.
Time and again, this institution throughout its history sort of rising to the challenge of not only existence, but being able to thrive in this part of the world. You don't expect the state or any government to simply write a blank check year after year after year. But you do expect your elected officials to, from time to time, look over the expenditures and make sure that things are going the way they ought to go. And the fact is that this institution has proven time and again, and it proves every single day that it's worth its relationship to the state and that that is valuable not only to the institution, but to its students and to its alumni and to all of the people whose lives have been touched by the institution. I think that there's a place in history that might not have been there. This is a fair question. Where is A&M Commerce if not for Mayo's vision and for the legislature's decision in 1970?
I think we'd be where the two schools in Campbell and the two schools in Greenville and the one school in Sulphur Springs. We wouldn't be here.
I agree. One thing you mentioned there that I think was important, that Mayo got us started off on the right foot. There's always been a sense of family at this university. My wife and I moved here in 1969, and that was evident from the beginning, the way that my colleagues in the history department, but colleagues across the university were supportive of us. And you go back, that goes back to Mayo. I mean, people like Sam Rayburn had this unbelievable sense of belonging, and that's why he always kept Professor Mayo on the top of his list of people who had influenced his life. And as we went through the crisis of 86, we found so many alums that we really hadn't heard from years that wrote back and said, you know, Professor so-and-so inspired me to do this or made me a better person or helped make me successful. And I think that comes about from this feeling that maybe it's the fact that we're in a rural area and it's a small town, but there is that sense of belonging, which is, I think, a hallmark of this institution.
That sense of belonging is really, I think, probably that intangible that ultimately justifies the high cost of a wonderful education. There are ways to get into careers and there are ways to get into jobs that perhaps are quicker and cheaper than a four-year college experience. But that sense of who you are and who you can lean back and rely upon throughout your life, a university can provide that to students and it can continue forever. It can also, you just indicated, it can provide it for a young faculty member and his family, a sense of belonging and purpose and connection. That's an intangible benefit of a university, but certainly a crucial element in explaining to the world when we have to why it is that we're here, what it is we do, and why we need to continue to receive the support of the state and of the community.
We will certainly post links and share information as we come upon our 100 years celebration with the state. I think that this is exciting times at A&M Commerce, and there will continue to be exciting times as we continue this fantastic and obviously very valuable relationship with the state of Texas. Dr. Keith McFarland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Glad to be here.
Dr. Keck, a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Jared.
The President's Perspective is recorded and produced at 88.9 KETR's studio complex in historic Binion Hall on the campus of Texas A&M University Commerce. Support for this program is provided in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by listeners just like you. Make your contribution by visiting ketr.org on your desktop or smartphone and clicking Donate. While you're there, check out archives of this and other program offerings from your station. 88.9 KETR is a free and universal broadcast service of Texas A&M University Commerce. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.